Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Bretton Cliff Fleece.
Sorry, man, lady.
Oh, well, come on. Stop having a go at the woman that's announces you're being recorded.
She's putting us right off.
Well,
I don't like robots talking to us.
Well, she's not a robot. She might be a real person. But this,
oh, she's not.
This is Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus Euro 2021 special.
Is that the year, 2021?
It is. It's called Euro 2020, but it is 2021. Hello, my name's Cliff. Brett.
Yes, I'm Brett. Hello.
Yes, say hello.
I've been writing a lot of dates down recently, and I've been putting 2020.
But have you been writing dates in 2020?
Were
about 2020.
Is the year 2021? Is that the year that we're living in currently?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
You see, it's this COVID thing, isn't it? I've just lost a whole year. So I still think it's 2020.
Well, you're making us question myself now, but I'm pretty sure it's 2021.
See, no, you don't even know?
No, I did know, but you've put the doubts up us.
You put the doubts up.
You put the willies
up. They're worse than that, isn't it? When you put the doubts up.
Well, the willies up here is worse.
I'm still not convinced it's 2021.
Yeah.
Still not convinced. What?
What's your favorite ice cream?
Oh, not that. I'm not an 8-year-old child.
What is it?
Mr. Clifford. I don't know. I don't really like ice cream.
You know what?
Anymore.
I'm not bothered. I'm not
good.
Bothered what yours is or what any stranger tells us theirs is either. I really don't care. But I've been told a lot. Apparently,
is yours?
Apparently, rum and raisin is very popular amongst the strangers.
Ugh. Well, that's not on, is it? It's awful, lad. I mean, what raisins? Do the raisins
also,
get frozen?
Ice cream, a children's food. Rum and raisins, not acceptable, is it? It's a child's food.
Yeah. They might as well just put vodka in it. But do the raisins get frozen, do you reckon?
I've got no idea. I've never had it because I've got no interest in that flavour of ice cream whatsoever.
Well, then what's your favourite 8-year-old
Mint chucky chip. We've made this...
Mint chucky chip?
I made this blatantly obvious on my Twitter account and I've had umpteen... Responses going, no, it's not. Said, to be fair, I said, I think we can all agree.
You're allowed to have your own opinion, though.
I know, but surely. I said, I think we can all agree that it's the best. I think what I should have said was, my favorite ice cream is mint chucky chip. But what I made the mistake of saying, I think we can all agree the best flavor is this. And I think that invited people's opinions upon us, which to
that
be honest,
you didn't want.
I couldn't give a fuck.
The only time I ever have an ice cream is when if I'm on holiday and it's very warm, that's all.
Mm-hmm. What flavour would you have?
Well, when you go, for example, if you go to Spain, there's an abundance of flavours. Mm-hmm. Some flavours that aren't traditional flavours.
Yeah,
for example, bubble gum.
Yep. You know, I mean, that's flavor, not a good flavor. Which,
I don't think I had. It's not, is it? I think I had sorbet or something like that. I can't remember what I had. Lemon sorbet or something.
That's nice. Refreshing.
Refreshing, yeah. On a long walk when the sweat is dripping off you and you're feeling very sexy.
Yeah, of course. You know what people say? Oh, I had a lot of people saying vanilla is their favorite flavor. You know what I say to those people? Get a fucking life.
You see, you are. You're right on people for that, the ice cream choices. You're saying that you don't care, but really, underneath. Yeah, but
they've told me what their favorite is.
I told you about that kid who I coached, didn't I? Who it was pancake day and I was doing a course or whatever, football course.
Pancake day?
Is it bad cake day? No. And I asked them all what they have on the pancakes, and they all said the traditional stuff. Obviously, the best is jam and sugar, because that's the best.
Yeah, because you don't really need sugar on top of jam, do you?
You do. I used to dip strawberries into sugar and eat the strawberries. But this that's one good. Kid put his hand up and went, tomato sauce.
And the pancakes.
On the pancakes. That's awful, isn't it? Absolutely wrong.
Do you think he's actually having pancakes? I think he's probably just having bread with tomato sauce. <Yeah. laughs>
But what do you think of people who eat tomato sauce sandwiches? I think it's okay.
I think my brother and my dad have them or had them.
Right, so you've got to say it's okay.
Yeah, but I don't like tomato sauce, so my opinion of it is it's a rubbish sandwich. But I would never have a brown sauce sandwich.
You wouldn't go that far.
I mean, I love brown sauce. I much prefer brown sauce to tomato sauce, but I would never have it in a sandwich. No way.
Have you just banned the tomato sauce because you like Paolo Di Canio? Is that what it is?
I haven't banned it. It's allowed.
That's allowed. Right.
Anyway, what's the metal stepladders doing behind you?
Well, what I was going to do, actually, and I forgot to do it, and now I just look like a tramp, right? What I was going to do, because we're doing a football podcast this week, is hang football boots on the...
Imagine. I don't think it would look very good.
So it looks like the boot roof. Well, hold on. I'll give it a shot.
Okay, go and put a pair of boots on them. At this point, Brett is hanging some of his child's boots on some metal stepladders. And no, just one pair.
One boot.
One pair. One, of,
just not one even boot. A pair, just one
just
boot.
Just one boot.
Do you think it looks good?
I don't think it's award-winning.
I wouldn't get on the BBC, would I? With the backgrounds.
I don't think so. Yeah. Have you seen Noel Gallagher?
No, I don't think
Have you seen Noel Gallagher sticking up for the Queen?
No. What's he doing that for?
He's having a go at Harry. I was going to say Harry Wilson. That's not his name, is it? Harry Prince.
No,
Harry
boy,
Prince. He's having a go at him, saying he shouldn't slag off his family.
That's a bit ironic, isn't it?
Just saw that just before we came on. Have you watching anything on the telly?
No, nothing that I can remember. Absolutely nothing. All I've been doing is getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, which is not a nice time to get up in the morning.
It's a really bad time to get up. However, I assume you're getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to work. I'm getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning just to be up.
Right. Well, that's fair enough when you've got a baby. But if anybody does get up at that time in the morning, for some reason, the pigeons, loads of pigeons, like they just stay on the road and they don't get out the way of your car when you're driving at them. In the middle of the road.
Like in the daytime, we'll move out the way. But this is our.
You're going to do this time. In the daytime. Exactly. This is what we do. We sleep in the road. That's what we do. Yeah. So that was a bit weird. That's definitely the earliest I've been to work and not an enjoyable experience.
Okay. Well, I feel for you. But yeah, I haven't really been watching that much. I've been a bit of Coronation Street, a bit of that Inside Number 9, which is the series has got a bit better from the first one.
Any more taserings on the street?
No more tasers, but I did watch that one, and I don't think it deserved to be on after 9 p.m. for that reason.
I like that she just appeared. I like that way that I mean, she just appeared.
I think if she'd been tasered and one of her tits fell out, then for sure put it on post 9 p.m. But just being tasered, I don't think it was worth a watershed.
Yeah. If she had been tasered and then teabagged, that would have warranted
can
it.
Can I just also disqualify? I wouldn't have wanted to see that, but I think it would.
You would.
No, not that lady. But teabag I think it. If it would have been more after 9 p.m., it would have been fair enough. But it wasn't to be.
Do want to see teabagging on Coronation Street, don't you? You do. Who would be the man? Who would teabag? Who would you pick out of Coronation Street Dev? People?
The answer is always Dev.
You can't have teabag out of there. Always Dev.
Yeah, always Dev.
Why?
He's the greatest actor ever.
So you'd like to see him teabag?
I'd like to see him doing it, receiving it. I'd be happy. Whatever. That's about it. That's all I've been up to, other than work.
And fantasizing about Dev teabagging people, tasering them, and then teabagging them.
Tasering their testicles.
That's what you want to see. Right, okay, sorry. You didn't mention that bit.
No, but I've thought about it a little bit more now, and that's the idea.
Yeah, that's what you'd like to see.
We've got a guest, haven't we? We're going to get one.
Almost
football,
see.
In it? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think I will watch many of these games.
Well, yeah, the friendlies were crap, weren't they?
I'm a bit confused. I'm a bit confused about why he played people that he definitely wasn't going to pick for this tournament. There he is.
With the England top as well.
Yes.
Nice one.
Yeah. I'm regretting that already. It's just one of the remakes of the 91, but they're a bit sweaty, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, definitely. I've got the proper one, and I've got the red one, and it's very tight.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to lose a bit of
this
weight.
This one's tight. God knows what one from the 90s would be like on me now.
Which what's the recreation of? What trip is it?
It's the Gaza. 1990.
1990. Okay. Yeah.
It's got the number. It's got the number on the back, but they haven't got the rights to have the Umbro on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not the Euros, then the World Cup.
Well, funny. Yeah. I was just thinking about it. Out of all the England shirts, the only one that I never had was the Euro 96 one.
Probably because they were incredibly baggy.
I always remember my mum coming back from a shop like on the eve of the tournament, and she said, "Oh, I bought you a shirt." And there I was thinking it was an England shirt, and she bought me the Dutch shirt, and that was baggy. That was massive. It was like it was like something you could wear to bed, sort of thing, and you wouldn't need a quilt anymore. It was that big.
We didn't even introduce Luke before he came on because we were.
Everyone knows who he is. Everyone knows who he is.
It's Luke from the Mariners. We've had him on before. He's back. He was talking about the Beatles last time. Now he's talking about football because you're a massive football fan, Luke. And in fact, you're a football artist. Tell us about that.
I am a football artist. Yeah, I basically draw football grounds, I guess. That's a simple way of putting it. Yeah, grounds from sort of the outside. So I've got a sort of a romantic notion with the whole approach to the ground. Sort of remind you of as a kid when you first went to the games with your parents or whatever, or whoever it is that you went to the games with. And I always liked the approach to the grounds more than anything, all the anticipation and the hope. So I started I don't know what made me start really. I did a few doodles. I had some space on my walls at home. I did one of Meadow Lane because my club's Notts County. And from there on, people liked them. I started selling them. And I do all sorts now.
As a kid, the best thing about going to the match is the approach, isn't it? When you can see the floodlights and stuff like that. Because it always in traditional old grounds and stuff like that used to be in housing estates, really, didn't it?
That's it.
I used to always look forward to catching the floodlights first.
Yeah, the ground used to sort of creep up on you because you'd be in the middle of like terraced streets.
Yeah,
but to go to the other question that you asked me, my favourite ground to draw has probably been White Hart Lane because I've sold the most.
Okay, good. And doesn't even exist.
I have a soft spot for the clubs that the fans that buy the most.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I know you've done a Roca Park, haven't you? Oh, you've got that.
Yeah,
point,
we got one. Yeah, we. We got a Roca Park.
That's done really well as well. Since you guys gave that a shout out, we're going back probably 6-7 months ago now. But yeah, since that's done really well as well. And again, I think it's a nice view. It's a very iconic view that I did of Roca Park.
So as a kid, did you get many away games and stuff like that? Did you go to many of the matches and stuff?
I did in the late 80s. So my first full season having a season ticket was 88, 89. And the first two seasons I followed Notts, we went home and away. And we went Wembley both seasons. And it was the first time Notts had been to Wembley in their history. So I thought supporting your football team, you got to go to Wembley every year. That was like the first sort of introduction I had to it. And then after that, for Notts, it's been almost a miserable existence ever since. We went to quite a few. Back then, Notts County seemed to be in the same division as a lot of local clubs as well. So, like, the other lot on the other side of the river, they were in the same division at times. Leicester, Derby, Coventry. So it was quite nice that you could have a handful of clubs in a short distance that you could travel. But sort of early 90s, I started playing a little bit seriously myself. So our games I started playing a bit more in the mornings, and then you didn't have time to necessarily get to games. So as the 90s sort of wore on, I was playing more than I was watching. So I kind of lost a little bit of that sort of love that you get in that sense. And it wasn't until I stopped playing again that I started going down again that you sort of find it rekindle it all a little bit.
Yeah. Well, just one more thing. The best thing about going to a football match for me, as well as, like you said, seeing the floodlights and the approach and the excitement and stuff like that, is when you were so close to the pitch that you could smell the grass if it was like raining or whatever.
Yeah.
That was just magical, that way you could smell the grass. It was just amazing.
Yeah. Sometimes we'd just get shoved to the front. So again, as a kid, me and my cousins would get shoved right to the front. So you're literally on the advertising boards at the front, sort of leaning over. You had the steel bar in front of you and you're just leaning over, sort of watching the game. And that was amazing. And it was
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, like you say, there's just the smells and just being within touching distance.
But we're going to talk about Euro 96, aren't we? Which was a wonderful tournament, a magnificent tournament.
But I just look back. That to me is like the best summer of my childhood. It was just amazing. And I was fortunate enough to be living in the city centre in Nottingham. I was like a stone's throw from where there was some games happening. Okay. I got to go to one of the games. It wasn't a thriller, but again, it was nice to be sort of involved. And the road that we lived on, you had all like the bunting, all the lampposts. All the host cities had like bunting coming from the lampposts and flags. And you saw that the Euro 96 sticker was on all the like the road signs pointing people in the direction of the ground. So you felt like you was proper part of it in a city as well.
I think we've said before, I came to football a little bit late. So Brett, you probably would say Italia 90, you can remember like Gaza and all of that. Like I feel like I can remember it because of all the clips and obviously we all know it, but I can't remember really. I would have been 9 at the time. I didn't really watch it.
1990, I think, was the time for me when I just fell in love with football. That's when I fell in love with it. And it's still my favourite tournament because it's the first one that I remember. This is my second favourite tournament, Euro 96, I would say. I mean, I still watched all of the games and stuff like that, you know, previous tournaments and things. But we've already done the Graham Taylor sort of era, haven't we? Yeah. And like the style of football from when Venable sort of took the team over and stuff like that's completely different if you watch it to going back to like, you know, a few years later with Taylor. It's much better, more technical and stuff like that. And he's letting Gaza just play, isn't he?
Yeah, 1990 and 96, they don't seem 6 years, they feel like they're decades apart, don't they? In terms of how much football had changed in that space of time.
Definitely.
And they're a bit like yourself, they're my favourite two tournaments. But I think if you, at the same time, I sometimes look back at them a bit now with a different view. And they probably weren't the most exciting tournaments, but I think it's all about the age that you're at and sort of how much it means to you at the time. And because some of the football, especially in 90, wasn't great. But even England in 96, the performances... Mm-hmm. the performance against the Netherlands was amazing. That was like, that was just the best game I've ever, I think that's the best game I've ever seen. For 45 minutes against Scotland, we were good. The Switzerland game was a bit of a non-event. Spain game was cagey and we could have easily lost. So I think rather than, I look back now and I think rather than thinking the football was amazing, I just think the overall riding emotions and the feelings. And like I say, I think I was just bang on the right age. If I'd have been 2 years younger, I don't think I'd have appreciated it anywhere near as much. But only someone a few years younger can tell you whether that's the case or not. But it just felt like the perfect age.
I think that seems about right. I mean, that's certainly my experiences of enjoying these tournaments as this. Like me and Brett said, we were 15. It couldn't be a better age for us to get behind this, and especially as kind of music and the whole thing about England at the time was it was quite exciting. Everything fed into it. It wasn't just football. Like in 1990, popular culture, football was part of it. And I think previously that maybe not have been the case. It was, you know, football was football, and you had football fans and you had music fans and whatever. And you know, you had these guys and these guys. But for 1996, it seemed like everybody just came together and all of that stuff fed into each other. That Holland game, that's the best England performance ever, surely. That in our lifetime, it's got to be.
There's only one that I could say would rival it, and that was the Germany one away when we won 5-1. Because I was thinking about this sort of earlier. It's either this Holland game or the Germany one.
I think if I could relive one, I'd go for relive the whole occasion, like you didn't know what was happening again. It'd be the Holland game, and I think because of my age, that Germany game was brilliant. But at the same time, I don't think there was much riding on it in the end. Is it like we qualified for the World Cup in the end? They did as well. They went on to get to the final. So it didn't have an adverse effect on them as such at the time either. Yeah. But whereas that Netherlands, everything was riding on it. It was a massive game. It was the big two teams in that group that was expecting to get out. And it was just a perfect performance. Everything that could have gone right went right.
I think for that game,
and we're knocked out the Scots.
I was going to say, everything went right, could have gone right, including conceding a goal at the end.
I think for that was because everybody.
There's an interesting story that I found out about that game. Gaza turned up and he forgot his boots because you know what Gaza's like. He was so excited about playing the game and stuff like that. And he had just signed a deal with Adidas, so he had to go around the rest of the squad asking them if they had any Adidas boots or whatever. And the only person that did was Teddy Sheringham, but he wore 11 and Gaza wore 9. So he just stuck loads of socks on and he played an absolute blinder in that game. Gaza, he was absolutely brilliant.
I think I've heard that.
Mad that he was wearing the wrong size boots when he was doing it.
I think that was also the game pre-game when they turned up at the stadium and Gaza insisted that he wouldn't get off the coach until they played Three Lions on the coach. They didn't have a copy of it, so somebody had to go and find a copy of it and he refused to get off the coach.
Well, I think the thing with Holland is that because they were always like not favourites because they've never won anything, right? But they were always the team that your dad, like my dad, admired because I guess he grew up with Cruyff and all of these guys. My dad, even in this time, he really liked and admired the players that played for them. In my house, it was certainly the idea that fucking hell, Holland are a great team, whereas England are just like England, you know, like it's hard to like put England aside, isn't it? And I guess it's probably the same for whatever country you're from. It's hard to look at them and go, actually, this is a good team that should do really well or whatever.
Yeah.
They had some big names. Dutch side had some big names as well.
Oh, they're excellent.
They were still a good side.
Absolutely. And I think the fact like we didn't just beat them, it was so emphatic. And that, I think that Shearer goal, Sheringham to Shearer, for me, is like that's got to be the greatest England goal that I've seen, I think.
Well, I would disagree because I think the Gaza one against Scotland is better.
I get that.
that is just an absolutely wonderful goal. But it's similar in my house as well. My dad used to, when after sort of Italia 90 and I was right into me football and stuff like that. He would make us watch Brazil 1970 team. He would make us watch that. And he would make us watch Holland 74, total football type stuff. So it was very similar in my house as well. So I was like, you know, Holland, the thing about Holland is they're always like, capitulate when they get the tournament. Yeah. So they used
it's mad, isn't it? But they do every time there's some kind of problem where somebody storms out or something like that. Every tournament.
It was Edgar Davids this time, wasn't he? He got sent home.
There was issues in their squad, I think, in your I think there was something. It was something to do with a race row or something or other. And there was a massive divide in the squad. But yeah, that seemed to be. If it's not the French, it's the Dutch. Like every growing up, every tournament, there was always something cracking off that would hinder their chances of progress or mean that they weren't going to get to the final because somebody had fallen out with someone. But yeah, there was still also playing in that orange shirt. There's something about playing in that orange shirt. It's just so iconic. And to put four past them, it was
unexpected. I think for England to put four past Holland, regardless of any rifts in the camp or anything like that, for England to do that, you were like, oh, fuck. And that's when it gets really exciting. And you think, maybe if you can beat Holland 4-1 and you can beat them in such a manner like that, maybe you can go on and win the tournament. And I think that's when it really ramps up for England.
So the ones I was always fond of, I like the Croatians because that was the first real time they sort of came on the scene, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
That was a good group as well. They were the side I got to see. I got to see them beat Turkey 1-0.
Oh, wow.
At the City Ground. It wasn't the greatest game, but there was other games at the tournament that they played in where they were just absolutely superb. The Bulgarians were a good side at the time. I know they didn't have a great tournament, but they had some good players.
Stoichkov was still in the team.
Stoichkov.
Yeah,
he's smacking free kicks in and stuff like that. He scored a few, I think.
If I'd have been able to see Stoichkov play, whether he was 35 or whatever, I would have absolutely snapped anyone's hands off at that point.
That is the thing, right? Because Bulgaria played Romania at St. James's Park, right? So Hadji was playing and Stoichkov was playing. I'm not too sure whether Lechkov was playing because I like him as well. But the only reason I didn't go is because it was at St. James's Park.
Imagine
and I've
we
never
should have
been there in
the
whole life.
We should have been there. Like, Hadji and Stoichkov are two of our favourite players and we just didn't go.
Well, the Scotland game was a funny one for me because I was 15 and I was a teenager. And my dad had brought us up, you know, watching football with him and stuff like that. And for some reason that I can't fathom in my own mind, I left my dad downstairs and I watched the match by myself in my room. And I always regret that I watched that game by myself. I don't know why I did it, but that game was obviously Gazza's goal and stuff like that, which is, I think, the greatest England goal ever, I would say. It was just unbelievable. And obviously they missed the penalty that Yuri Geller caused, didn't he?
Yeah, because he made the ball move.
Moving the ball
bit.
From a helicopter. Yeah, that was me, I did that.
I saw an old episode of Fantasy Football this week where Yuri Geller was the guest and he was talking about what he'd done and how he'd done it. And it's he's convinced.
He's a nutcase, man. What a frutch.
He got everyone putting their hands on the screen on the TV.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Before the Germany game.
So if you touch this orange spot, we'll beat Germany.
Yeah,
sure. Absolute nut job.
But he did bring Michael Jackson to Fulham or wherever, Leighton or wherever it was. So that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
We can thank him for that. But I think that was like the Three Lions sort of explosion at the end of the Scotland game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Everybody started singing it and stuff at the end of that. I think that was when that sort of really caught on.
Yeah, so the guy that did the music for that, he did an interview where he was talking about it, and he said they weren't allowed to play England songs because technically it wasn't classed as an England home game, it was just a tournament game. So you're not allowed he wasn't supposed to play songs that were for one side or the other. And at the end of the game, he turned around to his boss, he says, I'm going to put Three Lions on, and his boss was like, no, you can't. He goes, no, I'm just doing it. He says, if they sack me, they sack me. This has been the best day ever. And he just whacked it on, and that's when the whole ground sort of, it erupted, didn't it? It just went viral.
Still get emotional when I watch that, but when the whole crowd and that are singing Three Lions
and stuff
like that.
Then, right? But
What we should have had, Cliff, is a pre-tournament in Hong Kong. That's what we should have had, where we play pub teams and
against
stuff
the
like
select,
that.
Against the select 11.
Against the select 11. And just did let you know, the lads go out.
You know that game?
A couple of dentists, yes.
Uh-huh. That game, when they played that, they originally thought they were getting a cap for it. It wasn't until like 2 weeks after.
That's right, aye.
UEFA came back and says, no, I don't think so. You're not having one for that.
It's mad that when you think about it.
It wasn't even like Hong Kong national
on
team.
Earth did we play
it wasn't even
league.
A national
random,
team.
Yeah.
Random.
Just 11 people that happened to play in the Hong Kong league.
I think there was a lad who played for Wimbledon. I think he might have played for Sunderland. I could be wrong, but he's called Cunningham, I think. A
Kenny
winger.
Cunningham.
It's not Kenny. He was there. He was the fullback. He played for Sunderland, he did, aye, but it wasn't him. It was
somebody. What, and he played
else.
For Hong Kong?
He played in that select 11, really? Yeah, against Sunderland, aye, uh-huh. Because it was on like 9 o'clock in the morning, I remember waking up early.
Yeah,
to watch
I remember
it.
That, yeah.
Yeah, friendlies don't do anything for a tournament in that sense. So they don't sort of get you up for it. If anything, they put. It's like with the two games that have happened recently. We've not really seen anything that's going to give us any inclination of what we're going to actually do at the tournament.
That's what you get,
and no. I think to that extent, it puts people off a little bit. So until it actually starts the proper tournament, some people do find it a struggle maybe to sort of get up for it and be like, yeah, I can't wait for it now. But
yeah,
like we're talking now on the eve of the whole tournament, it's like all I've done for the last week is listen to previews and podcasts and chats about and sort of retrospectives and all that. And I'm well up for it now, but you watch. We'll go and get a 1-1 with Croatia and he'll play no one exciting and then we'll be questioning it all again.
What about, so Scotland game, Gaza was amazing. The Holland game, like that, those two, before that, great goal, great performance. Spain was pretty shit. And then,
so only Stuart Pearce thing in the Spain game, isn't it? That's of any note where he's sort of redeemed himself from 1990.
They also had
a
perfectly good goal disallowed in normal time.
Yeah, but who cares about that? We've got home advantage.
It wasn't
we
even
should.
Close. It wasn't even close, was it?
But I was watching that earlier, and I'm big on me football and stuff like that. I didn't recognise half of the Spain team.
No, that
who
was,
they
that
were.
That Spain team. Side wasn't that well known.
They had some Luis Enrique and Hierro were playing. Like there were some big names. But I think
not many though.
No, I think a lot of the strike. I don't know who the striker was. You know, like there was about three or four great players in there, but overall not great. I mean, again, Spain really flattered to deceive. Hadn't won anything. They were again like Portugal, like Holland. One of these teams that your dad or whatever would say, "Oh, great! These are a great team to play good football or whatever," but they never win anything. And I think Spain were a bit like that. It took a lot of work for them to win something. And then after that, Portugal. But I think then you get that semi-final and those moments, Gaza stretching, Darren Anderton,
hitting the post.
Ah, man, like I can remember them. I remember this was the game I watched in the living room with my dad. And I think this was the first time me and him had really watched the game together. And the first time I was really involved in it in, you know, it finished. Mm-hmm. I remember being kind of emotional afterwards. And you were willing those chances to go in, weren't you? It was so close to getting through.
I always remember the Germany one. My dad wasn't living with us at the time. He'd moved out about 6 months before the tournament. And the only game I actually ended up watching with him was the Germany. And he said to me, about 20 minutes before kickoff, he says, "Do you fancy going and watch it down the pub?" So we ran a mile and a half down to this pub that was near us, got to the door and they said, "No kids." We then had literally five minutes to get back in time for kickoff. So we then legged it back home. It was absolutely knack. We felt like we played a game by the time it kicked off.
Early goal as well. You would have missed.
I remember everything about that game. That's one of them ones that it's just ingrained on the mind.
Yeah, that's it for
like
me.
You
mentioned that's
the chances, the missed chances. It's like you can almost feel. You almost hear Gaza make contact with that ball.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
That he misses. You know what I mean? It's almost like every time you watch it, you still expect it to go in.
I mean, I hope he's not listening to this because he'll definitely be crying at this point, won't he?
Have you ever heard that interview that Anderton did about the semi-final as well, when he talked about if they'd have scored? So he said,
"What are we going to do?"
The plan was they'd all agreed that if anyone scored the goal in extra time, which was the golden goal, the way they were going to celebrate is they were just all going to sprint off and run down the tunnel and just disappear. When I heard that interview, and you think that would have been the best celebration, the best moment ever. It was just going to be like two fingers up to the opposition, off we go, and that was it. They were just going to come. And you think back to that, and if you're, if that had happened.
Apart from that, we've got Muller prancing around like a twat.
That's the defining moment, isn't it? That's the defining image.
I hate
that
celebration.
Man. I remember my dad didn't like him before the tournament
And rightly so.
And then he did that. But that was the thing, right? It was like, oh, this guy's a bit arrogant. And then he did that. And it was like, oh, fucking hell. He's like, he's literally the worst. Like, he's so bad.
I loved watching everything back in the tournament. But this game is really hard to watch for me, I think. Yeah. Really difficult to watch. And it's for the very reasons that you're talking about. I know that Germany had like a header disallowed for no reason.
Yeah, nothing.
When it was golden goal.
Just no reason. Outside of England, what's your favourite moment of that tournament?
I think it'd have to be going to see it to see a game. Although no, I'd go through the Suka chip.
Yes, correct answer.
Yeah, that was just class, especially because you had what was supposedly the best goalkeeper in the world charging out. And he was just talk about no man's land. That's the most no man's land any goalkeeper's ever been in. And it was just exquisite the way he dinked it.
I think that's
there was nothing on it. It was like a golf wedge shot, wasn't it? And it just the way it went in, that was a beauty.
What a player, man. What a player. What a story for Croatia as well, like coming out of the ashes of Yugoslavia and all of that kind of stuff, and all these talented players that came together for that tournament. I love that story and I love that goal. And I love pretty much all of the players that went on.
That was a hipsters team before hipsters was even a thing.
Yeah, Boban. Talk about funny me and Boban all day. But Brett, what about you? What's your favourite bit?
Favourite bit is definitely Gazza's goal.
Outside of England, man.
Astounded by the thing. Eh? Someone else?
Yeah. You're not allowed England.
What's your favourite bit? Not that!
Except England?
Did you? I didn't hear you say except. Did you hear him say that, Luke?
That's why I went for Suka.
Well, what is the... No, I'm just going to stick with Gazza.
No, sorry. Poborski, the lob, the Poborski
because scoop. That Poborski scoop looks like a fluke, to be honest.
Well, it was terrible. Everybody loved it. It was awful. An awful goal. You've got Suka doing that exquisite chip. And then Poborski just doing the fucking scoop at the other.
He looked like he had sideshow Bob shoes on.
To be fair,
like that,
Czech Republic again, Nedved and these guys. I mean, they're some great players in that team as well.
Yeah, but I don't care about any of them, Cliff. I just care about England, man.
We're going to get going with a quiz, and I've written a quiz down in my drunken state. So hopefully I can read it and remember the answers.
It's
a Euro quiz. So when was the first Euros? That's the first question.
First Euros?
Yeah.
Was it 72?
Okay. I was going to go 72, so I'll go earlier. I was going to say I'll go 68.
1960, apparently.
1960?
Yeah.
60,
yeah. Question two. Do either of you know the name of the trophy? You know, like Jules Rimet and that?
Is it in any songs?
It's not.
It's named after...
Is any good songs?
It's named after someone again, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who it's named after. I know it's named after somebody whoever made it or something like that.
Brett, any advance on that?
I have no idea, but I do have a story about the Jules Rimet trophy. Apparently, Frank Skinner met David Seaman at a film premiere, and David Seaman walked up and went, "Who's this Jules Rimet like?" Not in a Geordie accent, obviously. But yeah, so no, I don't know what it's called. Is it called Sausages for All?
No, it's another Frenchman, I think. Henri Delaunay Trophy. Who would have thought?
Rubbish.
I didn't make the name. Who
still rubbish.
Is England's leading scorer in the Euros overall?
Whatever.
Yeah. And how many goals did he score? Who do you say, Luke? Who do you think?
Keegan. Yeah, go on. I got Keegan.
Keegan for you. Any a guess on the number of goals? That's not part of the points.
What points? You just have points.
We're not getting any points.
No, nothing. Makes no difference. How many goals do you think he scored over all the Euros that he was in?
I'm realizing it's not Keegan now. I'm thinking about it. Because it's only going to be like six or seven, isn't it? Whoever's got it.
Yeah.
I'm going to change my mind to Shearer.
Okay. Brett?
I'll go Mick Shannon.
Mick Shannon. Well, Luke's correct with Alan Shearer and also with seven goals. So that was him.
Well, you got four at 96, and it was it five at 96, yeah.
Okay. I can't read this question. Who did Denny DePatches? Who did Denmark replace in the 1992?
Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
Denny DePatches. Jesus Christ.
I think he's in The Sopranos. Luke's won it anyway, Brett, because you were too busy laughing, scoffing at us.
Well, I'll do a very quick quiz with you and Luke, right? With a knockout.
I've got one more.
Sudden death.
I've got one more question.
Yeah, but we're not bothered about it. That's the thing.
Okay.
Go on. Do your daft one.
Who's the only...
You just said he's won. Can't I won that back?
He has won because he's got two and there's only one question left.
Chance for a consolation.
Have I not got one?
One person has won the Euros as a manager and a player. Can you name him?
Lothar Matthäus.
It's a good guess. Brett, any advance?
It's not. No,
there's no advancements. There's no advancements.
You're close.
Beckenbauer.
Is it Jordi Cruyff?
No, that's further away. It's former Scotland manager Bertie Vogt.
Well, I think this quiz was fixed, so I'm going to let you still play facts. One. Well, yeah, all facts. What about that Denmark one? That was rather suspicious.
Denny DePatches.
You can't read your own writing. You're a doctor or something. All you've got to do, it's sudden death, so you've just got to name one person, right, that was selected in the squad, in the England Euro 96 squad. So I'll let Cliff go first.
Until we get to the end. Okay.
So, well, until you're wrong. It's like a sudden death thing. You get it. It's a little bit easier than Denny DePatches.
Hey, I was about to say him, though.
Then you'd be wrong, and then Luke would win.
David Seaman.
Yes. Well done. What about you?
David Platt.
Quickly.
David Platt.
Well, yes, well done.
Was he? Did not know. I can't remember him being in it.
You're going to lose then, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, yeah. Alan Shearer. I know he was there.
Yes.
Paul Ince. Luke.
Yes.
Paul Ince the coward. Teddy Sheringham.
Darren Anderton.
Yes.
Steve McManaman.
Yes.
Jamie Redknapp.
Yes. Ooh.
My favourite. Gaza.
Yes.
Philip Neville.
Yes. He's going for the hard one.
He is in the early
should
days.
Leave them for the last one.
Gareth Southgate.
Yes.
Nicky Barmby.
You're going for the... Have you got... They're written down here, Luke.
Well, it helps when you've been watching documentaries during the week. I've got one that I'm saving for a showboat.
And I know which one it is.
The
as
one
well.
You're going to win on.
Yeah, I know exactly who it is. Go on then, Cliff.
Is it my turn? I'm going to guess it now because I'm going to lose anyway. John Scales.
Unfortunately, the Wimbledon centre half.
My showboating one to win it isn't dissimilar to a John Scales. It's Steve Howie.
Yes.
Oh, what a good guy.
And you could have had, for a bonus point, Steve Stone.
Oh, is he?
And Ian Walker.
I couldn't have said him because of who we played for.
Exactly. You deliberately didn't say that.
Wouldn't allow yourself to say it.
Yeah. Well, so well done. Luke just wins everything, doesn't he?
Bombed out with the John Scales effort.
I was looking forward to being asked to name the Hong Kong Select 11.
I know. We'll do that next time.
Can you do it?
I was off. I was just looking at it.
Who's in it? Go on then.
Dave Watson played for him.
Dave
Watson, former Everton, yeah. Mick Duxbury, the one that played for United. And then the Wimbledon one I think you was thinking of was Carlton Fairweather.
That's it, because he worked with my dad at Sutherland. That's him.
There was only one player in the team that was actually a Hong Kong national. Everyone else, there was all like ink former England.
What was his name, Luke?
Who, the Hong Kong national? Lee Fuck Wing. He was the only one.
Lee Fuck Wing.
And apparently Gary Neville and Phil Neville had a fight after the game over who got to take Mick Duxbury's shirt. He was a former United legend.
Because he was good on Champ Man 94.
I remember that. Well, now we know.
That's good. Lee Fuck Wing.
Right, Luke, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Really appreciate you coming on again. So it's good to chat to you. Brett, thank you for your annoying quiz and your off-colour views.
That's slightly harsh, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We've got some music, haven't we, this week? It's quite good.
It is quite good. I like it. Yeah. Does Luke know this band? Do you know the Green Circles, Luke?
We know the Green Circles.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's who we've got this week.
Oh, nice one. Yeah, good lads.
The song's right. Red Light Revolution. I think they're from Newcastle, aren't they?
From Newcastle, yes.
Indeed. So I really like this tune. It's Green Circles, the Red Light Revolution. Thanks, Luke, for coming on. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Follow us on Twitter and all of that stuff. And we'll see you next time. And are we playing for England? Right. All right. See you later, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheers.
Suffer in silence. Turn up. the heat and the fires. Revolution. 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 Red light revolution. 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 Red light revolution.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.